Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the new episode of the NOLA Rundown. I am Jordan Grove, your host, joined by always my partner in crime, Will Osgood. Tell the people how you
What's
doing.
What's up?
We're currently waiting on. Here I am, just cutting you off already. Go ahead, babe.
Yeah. Oh, I just said I'm alive, you know, which is better than not being alive, I suppose.
That's true. That's true. If you weren't alive, you would be dead.
I wouldn't be able to do this podcast with you. Oh, gosh.
Right? I just have to fly by the seat of my pants, man, because Jason Bernoff is late, as usual, joining the podcast, if he joins at all, and Trey is MIA, as usual. So we have several topics to address this evening, Will, so we'll go ahead and get started and dive right into it, and if Jason joins, then he can just jump into the deep end with our conversation. So the first order of business, really, is one that we've kind of touched upon, but there was an update on it. It looks like a couple candidates for the Saints play-by-play position, the one vacated by Jim Henderson whenever he decided to retire, and for good reason. He's been there for almost 30 years. He's been there for as long as I can remember. He's been the voice of the Saints for as long as I've been paying attention to the Saints. But his replacement is one TBD. However, it does look like Christian Garrick, Todd Graffagnini, and that's really about it. But those were two major candidates that doesn't look like they're advancing to the next round. So leaves Mike Haas, former WWL anchor. He's the in-game sideline host for the Saints currently. Sean Kelly. He is the radio play-by-play announcer for the Pelicans, and he also hosts the Black and Blue Report podcast. Joel Myers, the play-by-play announcer for Pelicans TV, and Zach Streif, who former Saints player who has just minimal experience in broadcast, and that seems to be the four candidates that we have known. So, with that being said, we don't know how many other mystery candidates there are, since this is going to be a national job search because the parent company, Entercom, is a national company. But those four options I just mentioned, Will, which one of those would you feel most comfortable filling in for Hendo as his full-time replacement?
Yeah, and I think, as you alluded to, we have discussed this before, and Sean Kelly was the first name that came to mind for me. Like you said, not only does he do Pelicans Radio and the Black and Blue Report, but he also has done the TV, as far as I know, for the last 5 or 6 years, maybe even a little longer, for the Saints preseason games. And so, you know, there's a certain level of comfort I think that he has with the organization. And just, you know, at least with the Saints core players and roster and all of that. To me, that's important. Like, maybe there is a national candidate, as you said. But, I want it to be a guy who at least is familiar with New Orleans and lives here and has kind of been here. I feel like it's a job that kind of almost requires that, and I feel like the Saints are the kind of organization that would want that in their radio play-by-play guy, because he's kind of the NFL is obviously different than any other sport. You don't have a local TV broadcasting team, you just have a radio team, so they're kind of the really are the voice of of the team, and so I wanted to be a guy like that. But I wanted to talk a little bit or ask you about Zach Streif being you know, included in those four finalists. What did you make of that? Are you surprised? Do you see any upside to it? You know, what are your thoughts on him being a finalist?
So, I can understand the appeal of Zach Strieff, former player who's deeply associated with the community in New Orleans. Everybody knows him, knows of him. So I can see why he would have appeal. Also, then your booth would be former Saints players with him and Deuce McAllister. And he has done well whenever he's filled in. And so I think that with more experience, he would become more polished and would do a fine job further down the road.
Right.
However, I don't think that he is the right option now, because Deuce, as much as I like Deuce, and I think he offers something unique to the broadcast booth, he needs to be reined in several times, and Jim Henderson had that ability, and you can only get that ability from being a professional broadcaster for several years.
Right.
I feel like it's more of an emotional play for Strieff than a professional play to have him considered. I'm actually with you as far as who I would like to see in the booth. You know, if I had my choice, it would be Joel Myers. But putting Joel Myers on the Saints play-by-play call for the radio is a step down from his Pelicans play-by-play on TV. You know, the national exposure that you get being on TV, the money that you get being on TV, it would be a step down. And I don't see him wanting to do double duty as the Saints play-by-play guy and then turn around to do the Pelicans play-by-play. That's asking a lot for somebody Joel Myers' age. Sean Kelly, yeah, to me, he's the perfect age to slide in with the – he's got a great amount of experience. If you've gone over his resume, which is easily accessible doing a quick Google search, you can see that he's been in broadcasting his whole career. He's been in front of the TV. He's been on the radio. I think he does a great job doing Pelicans radio. So I think that type of experience would be a seamless transition for him to be put in the booth. And it's a position that he could be in for the next, say, 20 years. The guy's 46 right now. If he wants to work until he's 66, there's no reason why he can't, unless something unforeseen happens. So you've got a staple there that people like us who grew up listening to Henderson could have somebody like Sean Kelly who they would say, hey, I've been listening to this guy for 20-something years, you know. I feel like the choice is obvious, but there are several strong candidates. However, Zach Strieff is the weakest by far, in my opinion, of those candidates.
Yep, totally agree.
So, you know, we're going to have to just kind of wait and see how it plays out. Right now, it's really been kind of hush-hush as far as any favorite that might emerge or someone who might not be as strong of a candidate as we might think. So it's really impressive on Intercom's part for not letting anything slip about who might replace Henderson. So I've tipped my hat to you, national radio brand. So keeping with the Saints, have you seen the latest Madden rankings, Will?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. We talked about it a little bit, but can I just ask you one further question on that? Just, and we can, it'll take half a minute at the most.
Of course, Will.
Are you surprised that they haven't named this person, whoever it is, already?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, the Saints have their first preseason game, I think, I know it's less than a month. I think it's like 24 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that the hire would have already been made. And I feel like the hire is they should announce it soon because training camp starts in a couple of weeks, you know, which is going to bleed into preseason football. So the timetable's ticking here for them to hurry up and make a decision so that person can then get comfortable with their surroundings as well, you know. Maybe spend some quality time with Deuce, go out on a couple mandates, you know, share some beer. Just get to know one another, develop that rapport that obviously Henderson and Hoki Gaijon had that you could tell was palpable in the booth.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, if it is Sean Kelly, then I think he already probably has a pretty good relationship with Deuce. I think it would just be if it were, you know, maybe one of the other guys, that would be more of a concern. But I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so...
So, Madden Ring.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens, you know? Right? It's going to be interesting to see who the choice is going to be. And I'm kind of hoping, like, it's just about to do. Look at his body, actually. So, but actually, keeping with the Saints offensive line, have you seen any of the Saints offensive line or any Saints in general rankings for Madden?
Yeah, so I know that Ryan Ramczyk was the highest rated lineman on the Saints roster, according to Madden. And that overall, the group as a whole had pretty disappointing rankings. That's about the extent of what I remember seeing.
So the Saints graded out as the best offensive line in the NFL last year. So you would think that together the unit would have one of the highest rankings in Madden, you know, not only collectively but individually as well, just – you know, the group is stronger than the sum of its parts, obviously. But the Saints have a Pro Bowl Pro Bowl right guard in Larry Warford. But he only graded out overall as a 77 out of 100.
Crazy.
Andres Pete, 72, the lowest rated offensive lineman for the Saints. Starting caliber offensive lineman for the Saints in Madden. Then you had Teron Armstead and Max Unger both grading out at 82, and then Ryan Ramczyk, 87.
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense to me.
No, it doesn't to me either. I think I don't actually know anybody that plays Madden anymore, so I kind of just dismiss any type of rankings that come out, but to me that's an insult, right? Like that's an absolute insult.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, keeping with the Saints, man, like I don't know if you heard about the bet that Sean Payton had with Philadelphia Eagles coach Doug Peterson. Did you hear anything about that, man?
No, this is the first I'm hearing about this. Tell me more.
So, they were in a celebrity golf tournament that went into, I guess, overtime. I'm not up in my golf knowledge or terms or anything, but both of them highly competitive, and because they're highly competitive millionaires, they decided to put a little bet on the game. So because they play each other this year on November 18th, the Eagles come down to the Saints, they put a bet on the game where Sean Payton bet that if he loses, that Eagles could wear their home jerseys to play the Saints. And then Doug Peterson was going to donate a certain amount of money to Sean Payton's charity. So, Doug Peterson ended up winning. So now on November 18th, which is a game with, I'm sure, playoff implications, The Eagles will be dressed in their home green jerseys while they're playing the Saints in the Dome.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Is this where you ask for my opinion on this?
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm ready for you just to chime in on whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the golf aside, and that's kind of cool in a way. But it's a little strange that a head coach, one, I think would even care about that. Two, they would have that authority to make that call. I thought that was something that either the players voted on or the team just decided, like the front office or whatever. So it's interesting that the coaches would have that ability to determine which uniforms they wear for a particular game. The other part of it that I think is interesting, because I do, like, I'm one of those weirdos who actually does get really interested in what teams wear each particular game, no matter what sport it is. And, I mean, the Saints, pretty much in the Sean Payton era, almost every year they've worn white, like the first couple of home games, and then they kind of transition. Usually they'll wear the black and gold for a couple of games, and then at the end of the year they're usually all black or something like that, with some variation, and not every year seems to be a little bit different, but it's usually something like that. I don't remember them wearing white at home as late as week 11. So that is kind of interesting. It'll be interesting to see if they wear white at home any of the other games and which ones. Maybe they do it differently and decide to wear white at home mostly, you know, near the end of the year. But we'll see. I just hope it's not white and black, because that's my least favorite uniform combination of the Saints. And
I'm hoping they wear their Color Rush uniforms.
That would be cool. That would be cool. But, yeah, I feel like the white and black, if they're going to wear them to me, which, again, that's my least favorite combination, but if they're going to wear them, I feel like those should be reserved for just the road. But that's just me. I'm a weirdo. I know.
Yeah, I mean, the Saints Color Rush uniforms are probably the best by far in the NFL by a long margin. And two, shouldn't more coaches be doing this? Like, this is fun, right? Like, knowing that the Eagles are actually going to be wearing their home green in the Dome in a regular season game. Like, that's fun. Like, that's new. That's different. It's something that hasn't – more coaches need to bet on stuff.
Oh, so are we getting into the whole gambling thing? You know, because that's legal now.
It is. It's legal, but it's got to be according to each state. And right now, Louisiana is dragging their feet on it, while Mississippi is embracing it with arms wide open, blasting Creed in the background, just saying, "Come to Biloxi, spend all your money. We're now the gambling capital of the Gulf Coast." And Louisiana's just sitting there with their thumb in their butthole.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree. It's a fun story. It's ultimately, I think, pretty meaningless, even though I do, you know, get interested in the uniforms teams wear. Ultimately, especially when you're in a dome, it doesn't really matter. It's not like you're playing at Old Tulane Stadium or something in September, where wearing white would actually be potentially an advantage for the Saints. You know, in a dome in November, it doesn't mean anything, but it's fun, like you said.
Yeah, like it's definitely fun, and with the NFL as a reputation in the garbage, they need to be doing more fun stuff. You know, amping up the end zone celebrations, letting players wear whatever the hell cleats they want to support whatever cause they want, betting on games with fun stipulations, stuff to make the NFL fun. I'm not talking about turning it into a circus like the XFL was. But there's a reason why the NFL is labeled the new fun league, because you barely have much fun watching it. There's so many rules and stipulations against the players expressing anything that it's this go do your job and don't you dare have fun doing it type of mentality is bad for business.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. But yeah, we've probably spent enough time talking about what jerseys these teams are going to wear in November. Maybe we'll revisit it then. But are we going to transition into some other stuff, other sports?
Oh yeah, dude, I got a whole outline right in front of me.
Cool.
So coming up tomorrow is probably one of the most fun events in all of sports. It's Major League Baseball's Home Run Derby. So, hometown guy that went to LSU playing with the Astros right now, Alex Bregman, is in the Home Run Derby. It kind of surprised me to see that he was in the Home Run Derby, considering he's not really known for his power, although he's cranked it up lately. Breggs isn't really known for launching one out the park. And he's joining like a freaking murderer's row as far as people. So, of course they do it in a bracket, right? So the number one overall seed is Milwaukee Brewer Jesus Aguilar, who is just launching the ball this year like he's playing T-ball against everybody else. And he is going against Bryce Hoskins. So I follow baseball, but I don't know who that is. Will, who is that?
Yeah, so it's Reese Hoskins. That's all right. He's a left fielder, first baseman. He's like your prototypical power guy with the Phillies. Big, like 6'4", 240 probably, kind of kid who, yeah, has a ton of power. So that matchup right there is two guys who look like power hitters.
So it looks like he's got... trying to find how many home runs he has this year. And obviously, 14 home runs so far this year. So not too bad.
He's missed some games too. So that's part of it.
Okay.
But he hit a buttload as a rookie last year. I think that was probably the main reason he got in. Well, and of course, we always have to talk about the fact that a lot of established hitters don't want to participate in the Home Run Derby because supposedly it ruins your swing. Although everyone's using the launch angle technique nowadays anyway, so I'm not sure that really has a lot of viability anymore.
Exactly. What's it matter? So Jesus Aguilar has 24 home runs so far this year, so not bad. Now, that's the 1 and 8 seeds. The 4 and 5 seeds in that same bracket is Alex Bregman going against your boy, Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, so that's a fun one, isn't it?
That's going to be a fun. Yeah, that's definitely going to be a fun one. So, I'm predicting Jesus Aguilar to advance in this round. Well, in the previous round. In this round, I got to go with my boy Braggs. It's a homer pick, all the way homer pick, but it's going to be fun. That's going to be a fun battle right there. And how do you feel about that matchup, man?
Yeah, I mean, Schwarber, yeah, I mean, he's another guy. Like, I mean, one of his nicknames is Schwarbomb. Another one is Baby Hulk. And Bam Bam. So, like, you know, like his nicknames all align with, and and like a young Babe Ruth. Like, so all of that, like, clearly he's known as a power hitter, right? So this is the stage for him, other than, you know, what he's done in the postseason a couple of years. But this is another stage for him to show that off. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me with Bregman. I mean, he seems to be a guy who steps up on the big stage too. So I feel like that's kind of why I say it. I think it'll be a really fun matchup between those two. And I think it might be the most competitive one. I think they might kind of, egg each other on, but you know what I'm saying? Like, kind of push each other. I think they'll both probably get double digits home runs. And I think it'll come down to just, cause it's a timed format now. So it'll come down to, you know, maybe the last 15 seconds or so, who has the most stamina.
Yeah, definitely. So that's going to be a fun one. And right now, Braggs has 20 home runs and Schwarber 18 on the season. So pretty much what and what right there as far as them launching homers. So on to the other side of the bracket, you've got the 2-seed Bryce Harper going against the rookie phenom Freddie Freeman. So I'm going with Harper there just because.
Rookie phenom? It's an interesting way to categorize.
Yeah, that's not the dude with the Braves, right? He's a rookie, right?
No, he's been in the league for 10 years probably.
Then who's the Braves rookie that I'm bombing on right now?
Acuna.
Oh.
You have Acuna and Ozzy Albies are the two young bucks that they got there. But Freddie Freeman's the guy who's been their best player, even when they sucked.
completely bomb on that one. Anyway, taking Harper.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's hometown hero for the National League, or for the All-Star Game festivities. I think he'll show up and he'll blow people up out of the water. He probably would be my pick to win it, honestly.
Yeah, same here. So, and then the other, the 3 and 6 seeds there are Max Muncy and Javier Baez.
Uh-huh. The most exciting player in baseball, the guy who should be the National League MVP if voting ended today. My take on Baez is he's either gonna show up and hit like 20, you know, and just go crazy, or he's gonna hit zero. He's the kind of guy, like, I don't think there's a lot in between that he could do. Because that's just kind of the player he is, and that's the kind of swing he has. Like, he's an all or nothing hitter and swinger of the bat. So that's what I would look for in that round.
Yeah. So who are you going, Baez as the homer pick?
I think I will, just because, again, I think this is 2018 is the year of Baez. So I think he will show up, and I think he'll hit a ton, at least in that first round. But he'll probably wear himself out and won't be able to do much after that. But I think he'll have a good first round.
Yeah, that's what I like. I'm going with Baez there. So Baez, Harper, and on that side in the semis. And then on the other side, I've got Aguilar and Bregman. I think my finals are going to be Aguilar and Harper, and and then Harper to win it all.
Yeah, I mean that's not an unreasonable prediction. But I can't believe we're even trying to predict the home run derby. It's fun. It's just so, like, I don't know that I've ever heard anybody do that before. So, but it's fun. Yeah, like I said, I think Harper will win it. I'm actually going to say, though, I think the winner of Bregman Schwarber probably gets to the finals, though. But with Harper beating whoever that is.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, I think it's going to be fun. It's one of the most fun events in sports as far as any type of celebrity contest is concerned, and that's kind of what I consider this. This is a celebrity contest just for the players. And for me, it's better than the dunk contest because the dunk contest no longer has any name brand appeal to it like it did back in the day. So, and then keeping kind of with baseball, man, news broke yesterday, day before yesterday, that LSU and Tulane now, two teams that have played annually in baseball for as long as I can remember, will not renew their series for next year or 2020, which I think is complete bull crap. You need to have a team inside your own state that you can hate, that you play annually. LSU doesn't really have that. I mean, I guess Tulane and possibly even ULL are the closest rivals that they have, which I think, screw it, play each other in baseball, basketball, and football each year. Just develop the hate, nurture the hate, because that's what makes sports great. Sports are made great because of rivalries. And, you know, Yankees, Red Sox, Bama against the world. You know, it's these types of rivalries that people want to watch. It's by denying the fan base that, then who are you developing your rivalry against? We, as far as LSU, no rivals against Alabama, I guess Ole Miss, if you want to live in the past, Texas A&M now. Tulane's been a rival for years. And it doesn't make any sense. Will, try to make sense of this for me.
You got me. I don't get it. It's certainly not like it's costing either of them, you know, any significant money in travel or any of that. It's the closest possible rival that the two teams would have. You know, it's always a pretty competitive series, fun series. Obviously, you have a huge LSU fan base in New Orleans, so, you know, it's good for Tulane in terms of potential attendance when they play, you know, at the new ballpark there. All I can come up with are reasons why they should not have discontinued it. I can't come up with any for why they would have. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't meet you. Conference realignment started to destroy rivalries, which I hated to see. And now money matchups is ruling the world, and traditional rivalries are being pushed to the side. And I say that like the Pitt and Penn State rivalry. That's being... that won't be renewed for years down the road. Same thing with the Pitt-West Virginia rivalry. That's same thing there. Texas A&M, Texas, Kansas, Missouri, BYU, Utah. Like, these are all rivalries that you knew about growing up, that you wanted to watch, that you knew there was hate involved, and that's what made the contest more fun.
Right.
And watching LSU play Miami in the Jerry World Stadium this year. Like, that cool marquee matchup does nothing for me emotionally, just that I would like to see my team win. LSU playing Utah. LSU playing Tulane. I want them to kick their ass up and down the field. I need all the touchdowns for LSU, none for Tulane, and I want all those injected directly into my veins. Like, I need this hate. And bring back hate, Will. Bring it back. We need it in our sports.
Well, that's going to be a bit of a tough sell, but but I mean, obviously I'm a bit of an outsider, but I've always thought it was really strange that LSU and Tulane didn't have more of a kind of what you're talking about, like a hated rivalry. Like, it, they're so close. I know, like, in the way distant past they did. And I realize some of it is, you know, LSU being in the SEC and Tulane being in the, is it Conference USA? I don't even remember. Or it's the ACC, or AAC, I mean, right? American Athletic Conference. Is that what they're in?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I realize, you know, the disparity in conferences obviously has something to do with that. But, I mean, like you're saying, it's such a natural rivalry. They're two schools that just make sense on paper to be rivals. I don't know if there could be such hatred as you're describing, but they should be rivals, and it sucks that they're not, and that seems to be losing steam as opposed to gaining it.
Yep. It's complete horseshit, and I don't like it.
All right.
So keeping it with the Louisiana discussion tonight, Will, we're going to be doing something pretty cool the next couple of podcasts. It's a major discussion that we've been having on the chat. We've had input from actually almost everybody, which is really cool to see everybody involved, at least in the chat, and not on the actual podcast. But we're going to be doing a best athlete from Louisiana tournament. So there's been a few kind of caveats added to this. So if they were born in Louisiana but moved when they were young somewhere else, they were disqualified because they didn't grow up here. You know, and I thought that was fair. Did you think that was fair, Will?
Yeah, I mean, because when we look at the list, there's a lot of really good athletes. So we had to come up with some ways to kind of narrow down the list and have some parameters that made sense.
Yeah, and really the biggest name that didn't make it was Clyde Drexler. You know, he was born in New Orleans, but he moved when he was very young to Texas and grew up in Houston. So it's he didn't really count. You know, if you don't spend your formative years in Louisiana, you don't really have much recollection of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I like to joke that Houston is just Louisiana West, but you could also say that pretty much everything but New Orleans is Texas East. So, but nonetheless,
yep.
It, going by, you know, strict boundaries makes sense too.
Yeah, I tell you, if I could redraw some of the state maps, I would have Houston and New Orleans in the same state, because the culture of New Orleans and the culture of Houston, they seem almost like sister cities to me. That's just what I get when I visit both places. And then, so we take Houston here, kind of cut the state off, like at Alexandria, really, and then North Louisiana can just be annexed by Texas. and so it'd be, or Arkansas, they can just have the rest of it. So anyway, getting back to our tournament here, so we decided that we wanted to do 32 people, but after looking at everybody, we ended up doing 64 people. So it's going to be a lot of people involved. And there's a lot of really talented people, though. It's going to be fun discussion, I think. We seeded them 1 through 16, just like the NCAA tournament. And I guess we can preview the number one seeds right now, right? Right, Will, and kind of give people a preview, or what you think, man?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. So breaking it down, the number one seeds are Peyton Manning, and this is strength too. This is how the NCAA does, like, the strongest seed on down. This is what I tried doing when I was seeding and getting feedback from everybody in the pod. So we had Peyton Manning, Bob Pettit, Bill Russell, and Mel Ott. Those are the number one seeds in our tournament. And looking at everybody involved, I thought those were the strongest.
Uh-huh. I mean, those are four Hall of Famers in their respective sports. Some of the, I mean, and not just Hall of Famer, you know, because there's different classes of Hall of Famers even. But these are guys who are like, you know, they're like cream of the crop even amongst Hall of Famers. So can't go wrong with any of those.
So we're going to go, I think we'll do, just kind of preview the top four seeds, and then people will figure out the rest as we go. So the number two seeds is, you can almost say that these are just as strong as the number one seeds. And in fact, almost all of them, I think you can make a very strong argument that they're equals to the number one seeds, but breaking it down, you had Terry Bradshaw, Robert Parrish, Marshall Faulk, and Lou Brock are your two seeds.
Man, yeah, those are pretty strong. So,
yeah, your three seeds, Carl Malone, Elvin Hayes, Brian Mitchell, and Lee Smith, who's your boy, former Cub.
Yeah, also former Cardinal, though, so he,
right,
kind of a weird love-hate relationship with him.
Yeah, I mean, you take the good, you take the bad, and there you have the facts of life.
Yeah.
And then the four seeds is really baseball-heavy. You have Albert Bell, Ed Reed, yeah, Vida Blue, and Ron Guidry. So obviously you're kind of going back into years past with Vida Blue and Ron Guidry. And until you really see their accomplishments and see like what they were able to do during their careers, does it really make sense as to why they're ranked so high? But, and you know, there's a lot to learn from the history of all sports. And until I started doing this exercise, I didn't know about either one, Vida Blue or Ron Guidry, until I started reading about them. And their accomplishments are just outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, cream of the crop Hall of Famers. Just some of the best to ever play the game of baseball.
Yep. So, you know, others that are included here, I'm not going to give away their seating, but Daniel Cormier is listed. Eddie Delahousse, famous jockey. We also have two other famous jockeys listed because until I started doing this research, I didn't realize how much talent that Louisiana produced as far as jockeys are concerned. Who knew? They have three of the best jockeys of all time from the state. It's crazy. Kim Mulkey and Eddie Robinson. So while we wanted to have this competition based off of professional accomplishments, if coaching is your profession, you are included. And there's really no two greater coaches from Louisiana than Eddie Robinson and Kim Mulkey. So they're included. Willie Pastrano, a boxer, is also included. Danielle Scott Arruda, famous volleyball player. I had never heard of her until I started reading about her, and her accomplishments are ridiculous. Rod Milburn, famous sprinter. He's also from Louisiana. So, you know, and then others like Burt Jones, Doug Williams, Billy Cannon, Jonathan Papelbon, Neil Smith, Cheryl Ford, Alan Faneca. Like, you have all these famous professional athletes that are in this competition. It's going to be a fun one, man. Like, some of the competition and some of the matchups are really intriguing. I think there should be some really good discussion on what makes an athlete in one sport better than an athlete in another sport. So that's really going to be fun to break down and see what everyone has to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it would be good to mention this now too, is there's guys, if correct me if I'm wrong, but guys like Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, and I think there are even a couple other contemporary athletes who, you know, are from Louisiana who didn't even get put on the 64 man or 64 person tournament list. So that just goes to show you how deep and rich the state of Louisiana is historically in athletic talent.
Right, and the reason for that, like Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., Tyrann Mathieu, they're not included. Even Glenn Dorsey, they're not included. While contemporary athletes and just great temporary athletes, not knocking their talent at all whatsoever, they just are still accomplishing their goals. So their list of accomplishments is only going to grow. And if we want to do this in 10 years from now, I'm sure they're going to make the list.
Right. And I think that's fair. I wanted to point that out mainly just to say that, you know, that just shows how deep and strong, the talent pool is that we were choosing from.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely going to be fun. And that kind of brings us to the last segment of the show here, and that's going to be our Man Crush segment. That while not Man Crush Monday, Man Crush Sunday. I know I've tossed around a few different names since we're recording Sunday, like Stud Muffin Sunday, which I thought was awesome, but you poo pooed that. So let's go ahead and knock it out, Will. You've had some time to think about it, obviously. So go ahead. Who is your Man Crush Stud Muffin for today?
I know you had another one, too, that I thought was even crazier, but...
Yeah, I can't even mention that one. That one's too risque.
Yeah, too risque. yeah. Doing this every week, it does become tough, especially during this part of the year where, you know, there's not as much going on, and but you know, I think I gotta go with it again. And we already talked about him on the show, but my guy Javi Baez just continues to light up the NL, the NL National League. Had another basically inside the park home run type of at bat on Friday night against the Padres in extra innings, where he, you know, he got on first with just a, you know, a cheap little infield hit, and then steals second, and the ball goes into the outfield, and he ends up scoring. And it's almost at the point where it's routine, and you just expect stuff like that from him, and you're not even surprised anymore. Like, he's so magical, and his nickname's El Mago, if you're not familiar. He's so magical that those things that nobody else even does, that's just him. That's hobby. You just come to expect it. And so I'm really excited to see, like I said, what he does in the Home Run Derby tomorrow night. And then he's starting in the All-Star game on Tuesday night, and it'll be fun to see, with his swagger and his style and all that, I'm sure he'll come out with some crazy cleats and probably do a bunch of crazy stuff. And it'll be fun to see him in his first All-Star game, hopefully first of many.
Definitely. So I'm going to keep it with baseball, and I'm going to go with a player from one of my favorite teams is Josh Bell. Tonight he had a walk-off double to win the game in the 10th inning for the Pirates to complete a 5-game sweep of the Milwaukee Brewers. I watched.
Thank
you. You're welcome.
Thank you.
I watched the game from about the 6th inning on, and it started storming, like raining cats and dogs in the 9th inning. Just a crazy game. The Brewers were up 5-2. The Bucks came back and beat them 7-6. So just a really fun game, really entertaining game nonetheless. And Josh Bell got it done. So while the Pirates aren't necessarily setting the baseball world on fire, they're not as awful as people thought they would be this season, and they are one game away from 500 as they enter the All-Star break. So it's not as bad to be a Pirates fan as it could have been. Let me just say it like that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And Cubs fans will have nothing but Thanksgiving for the Pirates for the next couple of days. So any wrath we held against y'all is released, at least for the next few days.
Yep. So that'll wrap it up for this episode of the NOLA Rundown. Stay tuned. We might have one coming during the week if we can get everybody on the same page and some fun stuff comes up to talk about, even if it's not sports related. We're also here for life questions. So Will, any last words for the people?
Yeah, also, I just want to say I'm really, really thankful that the Pelicans made a smart decision and signed Trevon Blewett to a two-way contract. I think that's going to end up being a big deal this season for the Pelicans if they're going to have any kind of success. So didn't need to spend a lot of time on that, but glad that happened. I think that's going to be a noteworthy addition for this Pelicans team, especially since the roster looks pretty much set aside from that.
Yep, definitely. Barring any unforeseen trades, the roster's set. I actually love the addition of Blewett. I agree with you. So, here's to the Pelicans, and we'll start our tournament next week. So, Will, until then,
peace.
Cross the finish line.
Good night.
Championship.